You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Maria McKinley.
And I'm Doug Storm. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, September 22nd, 2014.
I think that there may have been misunderstandings when this union drive started. This is Blooming Foods. This is our community asset here.
Blooming Foods employees held a rally in support of unionization on Thursday. We hear more about this later in the show in today's community report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Stephen Hale talks about his work with the Bloomington Community Orchard and the connection it creates between people, community, and the earth. On Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, these local headlines.
Former Monroe County Auditor Amy Gerstmann was sentenced Friday to 3 months on house arrest for using county-issued credit cards for personal purchases. Gerstmann served as the Monroe County Auditor from 2009 to 2012. Prosecutors said she used the credit cards for clothing, $1,800 school tuition for her children, and a personal trip to Key West. Gerstmann pled guilty to felony official misconduct and felony theft.
Starting October 1st, registering for a handgun permit in Indiana will be conducted electronically. On Thursday, Indiana State Police revealed the new online application process for registering a handgun. In a press release, Assistant Chief of Staff Major Mike White said, quote, "The new electronic application is designed to streamline the application process for both the applicant and law enforcement officials," end quote. Applicants will now pay online rather than at their local police departments. For further information on the firearms permit process, go to the Indiana State Police website at www.in.gov and click on the link Firearms Licensing.
New research from Purdue University reveals that young adults who frequent the college bar scene are the most likely demographic to sell prescription drugs. There's been an increase in prescription drug abuse over the past two decades, according to the state health leaders. Researchers say the new findings indicate law enforcement have over-focused on drug markets in poor neighborhoods. Brian Kelly, one of the Purdue researchers, says, quote, "Given that other nightlife scenes have been focal points for the distribution of illicit drugs, it is somewhat surprising that college bars are the only nightlife scenes associated with prescription drug selling. Now that we know young people in college bar scenes are engaged in selling, we can better tailor intervention efforts," unquote. The study also finds prescription drug abusers from the wealthiest families are more likely to sell drugs than other abusers.
Opponents of single-use plastic bags hope to see an ordinance on this issue in place soon. Towns, cities, and even states across the country are passing laws intended to limit the use of plastic bags, which, when disposed, pollute the air, water, and land. Jean Limecooler is a member of the Bring Your Bag Bloomington, the local committee pushing for the ordinance.
Our intention is to eventually pass an ordinance that would regulate the dispersal of single-use plastic bags in the community to try to reduce their numbers. And we're still researching and talking to a lot of people, and we haven't yet determined exactly what form that will take. So we're working towards that.
The impetus for the formation of the committee came out of the Center for Sustainable Living, a Bloomington-based nonprofit formed in 1992 that, according to its website, is focused on exploring ecologically sustainable ways of thinking, living, and interacting in our community.
We'll be working with the City Council to start with. We'll work on a city ordinance and then it may get picked up by the county later, hopefully. That's what we would hope.
The committee's initial focus is on the city because it turns out that most of the large grocery stores and big box stores, the primary generators of plastic bags, are within city bounds. Ms. Limecooler claims that over 140 other municipalities across the country have passed single-use bag restriction ordinances. Most of these are coastal cities where disposed bags are a major polluter of beaches. The Lakeside City of Chicago has a new bylaw that goes into effect next year, which will mandate that retailers charge customers a small fee for the plastic and paper bags that the store provides them. The state of California is currently studying a bill that would ban single-use bags. 80 countries around the world have passed legislation to restrict the use of plastic bags. Bloomington's advocates are leaning toward the model adopted by Chicago.
We're looking at the effectiveness of different types and what we think will work here in Bloomington. A charge for single-use bags, paper, and plastic at the checkout is extremely effective, has been shown to be very effective in Ireland and in Portland. We've seen statistics up to 80% reduction in the use of bags when you charge for them. So we'll be looking at what we think is a reasonable charge. It needs to be enough of a charge to incentivize people to bring their own bags. So finding what that amount is will be one of the issues that we'll be looking at, and also whether to do an outright ban of plastic bags or not.
The possible inclusion of paper bags is based on the relatively high amount of resources and cost that goes into their manufacture, plus their obvious negative impact on forests.
It's very important to us to educate the public and ease them into the idea before this is something that actually goes into effect, because we don't want to shock the public with it. We want them to also realize the logical reasons for doing this. We want everybody to be on board with this. I mean, of course, we can't get 100%, but you know, we don't want people to be taken by surprise. So we would like to do quite a bit of education with the public beforehand.
The Bring Your Bag Bloomington Committee holds monthly meetings at the Maine Public Library, located on Kirkwood Avenue in downtown Bloomington.
On September 17th, the Bloomington City Council stopped short of cutting taxes for a pair of million-dollar penthouses to be built along the Beeline Trail. The council did approve a tax abatement for the rest of the $14.6 million building. The new structure will house two businesses and 35 residential units, including the penthouses. Councilmember Andy Ruff objected to cutting taxes on the most luxurious units where the owners of the building plan to live.
I think one of the downsides to me in this case is the idea of abating the taxes of the residential dwellings of the owners of the very project we're considering abating. And I've heard from a lot of citizens in the past week or two, since our last meeting, that this aspect of this abatement proposal is quite unpopular.
Matt Origo and DJ Elmore are the two businessmen who plan to own and reside in the building. Several council members objected to what they called the optics of reducing property taxes on Origo's and Elmore's condos.
It doesn't actually look good. It sends a message that, well, you know, like, these are people who can afford to live in those apartments. They have the capital, the wherewithal as business owners to make this much bigger project happen.
The building would be between Kirkwood Avenue and 6th Street along the Beeline Trail. Scott Wells was the only member of the public to comment on the tax abatement. Wells said he supported the project as a whole, but not the tax abatement on the penthouses.
You know, this is going to set a precedent. I got a question for you. How many have you approved of tax abatements that have this kind of a setup where you have a personal residence getting a personal residence abatement on their taxes that they have to pay, and then of course they get the other abatement from the business? How many do you have in the city? I bet you don't have any. You're setting a precedent here. A lot of people are going, man, this looks good. I'd like to have that set up.
Tax abatements are meant to encourage certain projects by temporarily reducing their property taxes. Studies in recent years have questioned the effectiveness of local abatements. But in total, the council cut taxes for the new building by almost $700,000 over 5 years. They did agree not to cut taxes on the penthouses, which would have amounted to another $56,000. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Doug Storm.
And I'm Maria McKinley. Support for the Daily Local News comes from Smithville, a local provider of internet, phone, and TV service over a stabilized fiber optic network, serving Monroe, Greene, Owen, Lawrence, Brown, and Morgan counties. More information on Smithville's full line of services is available at 812-876-2211 or smithville.net.
Supporters of the unionization of employees of Blooming Foods rallied in front of the West 6th outlet last Thursday. Around 50 people gathered late Thursday afternoon to talk about the unionization drive and to listen to speakers on the issue. Daily Local News correspondent David Murphy was at the rally to interview an assortment of attendees, including a union organizer from the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, Blooming Foods employees, members of Blooming Foods Cooperative Association, and an IU faculty member who specializes in labor studies.
This is David Murphy reporting live for the Daily Local News. Could you give me your name and why you're here today?
Scott Barnett, Organizing Director, Food and Commercial Workers Union, Local 700.
And why are you here today at this rally?
We're out here showing support for the workers at Blooming Foods who wish to organize and be covered under a collective bargaining agreement.
Okay. And are there some of the organizers here today?
Yes, we have several Blooming Food workers here that will be joining us and to show support, to tell the let the board of directors know that they should respect their employees' rights to organize and bargain a fair contract for the workers here.
I'm Dakota Walker, and I'm a Blooming Foods worker. I've worked for Blooming Foods for nearly 5 years, and I'm here today because I believe that the workers deserve to have their voices heard.
Why do you think you and your fellow workers here need a union?
I believe that it's not an easy question to answer. We don't necessarily have guarantee of employment, guarantee of our hours remaining the same. We don't have guarantee of our benefits staying the same, and with a union we can bring in more support.
And you or your fellow employees spoken to any managers about your complaints?
Our direct managers are who we communicate with mostly, but we don't necessarily get to talk to those that are in charge of what goes on in the co-op.
Could you tell me your name and why you're here today?
My name is Gloria Ann Leck, and I'm a member of this co-op. And I've been a member for 7 years, and I've been disappointed in the values expressed by the marketing in the co-op and by the way the employees have been treated. So I'm really happy to be here to support their consideration of unionizing, because they need to do something to protect themselves, and I'm just going to support whatever that is that they choose.
Well, as a customer, if they are successful in organizing and getting a collective agreement, of course they would want to improve their wages and working conditions, which in turn might raise prices for the products of Blooming Foods. So how would you respond to that?
They already have very high prices, and they're geared very much to privileged individuals. I used to be a board member in a co-op in Ohio, and one of the things we were always committed to is to make sure the bulk foods were priced very low so that people who were struggling economically could buy rice and beans and flour. And I don't see any of that kind of commitment here. Everything is just priced very high. They're used to having a student body that they know they can bilk. And so they're no different than any other store in that sense. And so if they improve their employee situation, I think that in the long run helps all of us.
Blooming Foods started off as a small little cooperative of people who wanted to be separate from, quote, the system. The real interesting thing will be is whether shoppers of the co-op will support this movement.
I did actually approach the managers about issues that I was not happy with about in the co-op. I did talk to...
And what kind of response did you get?
At the time, it was a good response, but nothing ever came of it. I met several times with management about some issues I had there, and in fact, I met with George several times, but nothing really came of it. And then when the meetings were over, there was no follow-up. I didn't hear anything from anybody. It was like I never said anything at all.
My name is Jerry Sutherland. I'm with the White River Central Labor Council, and I'm here just in support of the workers here and their efforts to organize a union.
Have any of the people who are involved in the organizing here approached you directly, or how did you find out about this?
Well, I'm involved in the labor movement, so mostly the stuff that's going on in that area as far as organizing and stuff locally, then I'm going to hear about it one way or another. So I've heard about it through various channels.
And what kind of support would your organization be able to lend to these people?
Some moral support, mostly, but perhaps some other support in the area of perhaps a little bit of manpower, which I don't really think they need. They appear they've got what they need. But mostly it's a moral support. We might give them a place where they may be able to do some things as far as workspace. You know, my feelings are Blooming Foods is an asset to this community. I think it's something that's got a good customer base. It's a wonderful organization, but I think the employees are something that needs to be taken care of also. And that's what I'm here. You know, it's nothing against Blooming Foods. It's just here out in favor of the workers.
Okay. Could you tell me your name and why you're here today?
Yeah, my name is Joe Varga. I'm an assistant professor of labor studies at Indiana University, and I also am the spokesperson for South Central Indiana Jobs with Justice, and we are here supporting the Blooming Foods hourly workers in their right to organize in whatever way they see fit.
And do you think that effort or that right to organize has been endangered at all?
My goodness, it has, yeah. The right of workers, hourly workers, to organize in the workplace for the betterment of their working conditions is guaranteed by law since 1935 under the National Labor Relations Act, Section 7. And it has been eroded, attacked, undermined in so many different ways since then. And in fact, these days, most employers will employ armies of lawyers, will deploy their management against workers, will actually break the law and pay the fines because the fines are so low that it's just a cost of business in what they call union avoidance. American workers are at their lowest level when it comes to the percent of profit that are taken home by American hourly workers in history.
I interviewed the organizer from the United Food and Commercial Workers Union a few days ago, and I had asked him about these report that we'd had that Blooming Foods had hired a union-busting lawyer from an Indianapolis labor firm. And I was wondering if you knew about that and anything about this firm.
Yeah, Barnes & Thornburg is the firm. They have an established reputation. If you go on their website and look under labor, the first thing you will see is that they specialize in union avoidance. I don't want to comment on that right now because I believe things are changing in that regard. The community and members of the community that I know have been pretty outraged by this, and we've let the board know, and we've let Blooming Foods management know that we're outraged by this, and I don't want to speak for, you know, whoever's making the decisions, but I believe we're being heard. So yeah, that is confirmed that they did contract with Barnes and Thornburg.
So you mentioned that you've spoken to Blooming Foods management or members of the board?
That communication has been largely through email, through writing to the board, and yeah, things
have
of that
nature.
Have
you gotten any response from the board?
We have, yeah. And I think the response is positive.
Okay.
I think that there may have been misunderstandings when this union drive started. This is Blooming Foods. This is our community asset here. We are the member owners, and I think the member owners have expressed their opinion on this, and they're going to back the right of their workers to organize. And I think the management has heard that.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time.
Of course. Thank you.
I just want to thank everyone for coming out and showing their support for the Blooming Food workers. Good, successful. Looks like about 65 to 75 people here, and I think that's successful. Thank you.
As Scott Bardet, the organizer from the UFCWU, mentioned, the signing up of Blooming Foods workers is currently underway. The Daily Local News will continue to update listeners on the progress, or lack thereof, of the unionization drive and is still waiting for a response from Blooming Foods media representatives. You can hear an extended cut of the report from the rally online at wfhb.org.
Support for WFHB comes from Blooming Foods Market and Deli, your locally grown co-op grocery since 1976. Blooming Foods features natural, organic, local, and fair trade food and garden items with support for small farmers, co-op producers, and local food artisans. Blooming Foods Market and Deli on 2nd and Fess at Elm Heights, on East 3rd near College Mall, West 6th near the Courthouse Square, and right up your alley at Kirkwood and Dunn.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in, and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, and make a difference. Volunteer.
I'm Stephen Hale, and I've been a volunteer at Bloomington Community Orchard for 3 years. The orchard was created entirely from volunteers. A student working on her project wrote up this idea of a community-supported orchard on community property. And then it found a good connection with Bloomington Parks and Recs Department, who was also interested in doing something like that. And people got together and started working on it and started planting, and now 5 years later, we have an orchard. I actually got involved because I was taking a master composter class. I needed 20 hours of community service. I got out there, I got hooked. We had a great moment just this last Saturday during the workday. Great lady named Alaire makes apple butter. This year, she made her apple butter adding blackberries she harvested from the orchard. So she brings this gorgeous little jar with her butter in it. We get some Honeygram crackers, and all of us are standing around eating this incredibly good stuff. And the moment occurs for me in feeling connection with these people, community with these people, as well as the food we're eating, and through that food, a connection to the space that we're in. And all of that's happening on a really gorgeous September afternoon. You know, you can hear stories, you can see documentaries, whatever. Here's a group of people that got together and did something. Seeing it and doing it are very different things. When you're working with food in particular, and the plants that produce food, you can do something. You can plant it, fertilize it, prune it, whatever, and you'll see what happened right then with what you did. But you don't really know what you did for a long time. You know, it can take a season, it can take a year, it can take a couple of years. And these things are living things, and they're communicating with you, and you really say, oh, that's what's going on with that. Or that was a really great thing we did. Or maybe we won't do it that way the next time. But it takes time. So thinking in that longer period of experience and having that is something I think I'm still adjusting to, but also it's something I really like. Over the last couple of years, we've had many extra strawberries, blackberries. So people who come to visit the orchard, sometimes you'll see just inside the gate on one side, some potted things with a sign saying, you know, please take me home. Which again, it's another way of sharing as we're growing, which I think is part of our mission. It's not just what we do physically at the orchard, but what people learn there and can do elsewhere.
You may visit the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network website to see a full organizational profile and current volunteer needs at bloomingtonvolunteernetwork.org. Now here's a rundown of volunteer opportunities in Bloomington and Monroe County.
For the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake with three ways to grow local as a volunteer. You can be a real-life Johnny Appleseed. Volunteer for the Bloomington Community Orchard on their weekly Saturday Work and Learn Days. This is a great way to give and get as a volunteer. Give your time and get some knowledge about growing fruit trees in the garden. You are guaranteed to get in the spirit of the fall season if you volunteer for the Bloomington Community Orchard's 4th Annual Cider Fest from 1 to 3 p.m. on Saturday, October 4th. Help plan the event, sign up to bring baked goods, or volunteer to be on hand the day of. Or if you're all about things local and sustainable, then volunteering some time with the local Growers Guild may be the fit you're looking for. They have opportunities for folks to visit some of the unique farmers markets around Indiana to share information about the Guild with farmers and community members. Sharing your time on just one Saturday is a big help and helps spread the word about the value of local food. And that's a look at just some of the ways you can connect to your community through volunteering. For WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Whitaker. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB, supported by Smithfield, your Indiana communications company, at smithfield.net, and by Blooming Foods Market and Deli, your locally grown co-op grocery. Today's headlines were written by Stephen Williamson and David Murphy, along with Joe Crawford for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services.
Our feature was produced by Dan Withard with correspondent David Murphy. Activate is produced by Jennifer Whitaker, along with the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by the Impossible Shapes. Managing producer is Joe Crawford. Executive producer is Allison Bektesh. For WFHB, I'm Doug Storm.
And I'm Maria McKinley. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. Recognized among the best newscasts and breaking news coverage in 2013 by the Indiana Professional Chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. Stay tuned for Bring It On, our local forum on African American people and culture, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.